This is the Upgraded Life Podcast, and in this episode, I'm going to bring you Dan Nicholson. Dan's trained as a CPA, but he's evolved to be much, much more than your typical CPA. So in this interview, you're going to hear me ask all kinds of questions about money, finances, and the money mindset. So if you're looking to add some financial wisdom into your situation, this is going to be a great show for you. So let's buckle in and go for a ride with me and Dan Nicholson. Hello, thanks for tuning in to the Upgraded Life Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Nick Sotelo. The Upgraded Life is my personal project where I help people realize and reach their potential. I've been a professional helper for 20 years. Here's what I'm convinced of. The life that you have right now and the life that you want tomorrow is a product of your personal mindset, mission, and movement. Each episode of the Upgraded Life Podcast is going to give you something that you can do as soon as the episode is over to upgrade your personal mindset. Your mindset informs your mission. Your mission tells you how to move every single day. And together, that is the Upgraded Life. All right, you're here with another episode of the Upgraded Life Podcast. I am grateful and excited for my guest today, who is Dan Nicholson. And Dan knows money, and Dan knows how to help people know their money in a way so that their money starts working for them. That's how I got connected to Dan, whether he knows it or not. I've bought into some of his programs. And he's a guy that I met through some overlapping folks that are involved in masterminds. You know, the people who have been listening to this show have heard me talk about masterminds. I think that's how I got connected to you. Various different overlaps with people that I have been learning how to upgrade my life with, and introduced me to Dan Nicholson. So I'm super grateful to have you here. I'm excited to talk about money and mindset and all the things that you're doing right now. Super grateful to you, Dan. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, and it's fun to really connect with you because I've seen your name all over the place, and so we run in the same circles, and it's fun.
Absolutely. Bring together. Nice. So Dan, I'll let you tell my audience what it is that you're doing and why you're excited about it these days.
Yeah, so the unifying theme across all of the businesses that I'm involved in comes back to one, working with purpose-driven entrepreneurs. So for me, that's business owners, entrepreneurs who are concerned with things more than just arbitrary numbers. So the person who's like, I just want to make a million or 10 million because it's about the money. That's not usually the type of person I'm working with. I'm working with a person who wants to make the money because there's something greater that they care about. Maybe that's helping out their family. Maybe that's retiring their spouse, or, you know, retiring their parents, or it could be buying a second home, or any number of things. I don't really judge what they are. I just want to know that someone is driven beyond just arbitrary numbers. Otherwise, I go back to corporate life and I can tell you about my previous life if that's relevant at some point. But I want to feel like there's meaning and I'm helping people get closer to the things that they want. And ultimately, what I help those purpose-driven entrepreneurs do is achieve what I call financial certainty, which is what I believe business owners are really seeking.
Love it. I'm interested. I want to know kind of what your previous life was look like in corporate America and what made you jump to what you're doing now.
Yeah, I have a series of contradictions prior to what I've done for the last decade. And maybe that's not too dissimilar to many entrepreneurs who we have this kind of tug of war going on in our brains to some degree. So as a kid, I was both the cliche entrepreneur with all kinds of business ideas, most of which were nutty and harebrained, and my parents got to rein me in. And at the same point, painfully shy. Speech problem, terrible teeth, all the just awkward, and but had this sort of competitiveness. So I knew I wanted to do something with entrepreneurship. Went to college, first person in my family to go to college, and initially was a marketing major, changed to accounting, and there's a whole backstory for that, but changed to accounting and information systems because I thought, okay, brought a skill set to start a business. Accounting's fundamentals, technology, it's kind of the future of things. And then I went in this whole opposite direction of being an entrepreneur, which is I ended up doing a fellowship at the board that writes all the US accounting standards. Only impressive to other accountants.
Right.
I can tell you that. Especially because I was single when I moved out to Norwalk, Connecticut, just out of New York City. I can tell you that not particularly attractive to other 22-year-old, 23-year-old women writing an accounting standard. So that put me on this whole other kind of career path. The standard I worked on was derivatives and hedge accounting, which I won't bore you with all the details of that. So that put me on this whole path of being this so-called derivatives expert. Moved around for a bit, worked for one of the big global firms, worked for a Warren Buffett-backed company, getting ready to go public, worked in strategic finance, just kind of all over the place.
What time frame was this?
This was over about a 7 or 8 year period, 2003 to 2010.
Nice.
Where I was kind of dealing with this quarter life crisis, frankly, of got this thing on my resume, got these credentials, and dealing with sort of what should I be doing, you know, making more than my parents at this point, and not particularly enjoying the work that I'm doing. And I kept thinking that it was because I hadn't really developed my own self-awareness at that point. I kept thinking it was the company or the management team. It's like, okay, consulting, not for me, because, you know, they don't really value us as humans. There's a pecking order. I need to go somewhere that values us more. And so I kept making these career adjustments all in the accounting finance space. Cause I was dining off this thing on my resume, having this fellowship. It's sort of the, in the accounting world, it would be the equivalent of clerking for the Supreme Court. So that's sort of, I could dine off that for a while because people are like, oh, you must be smart. I'm like, oh, what? Actually kind of a train wreck because I don't know what I want to do. But yeah, maybe. I don't know. Maybe I'm smart. Maybe not. But I kept getting these opportunities and moving around. And then finally, I realized that I was never going to be content until I did something more entrepreneurial and kind of was steering my own ship. So that's when I combined sort of entrepreneurial spirit with trying to figure out how to kind of redefine the CPA space. So start an accounting firm called Nth Degree CPAs with the idea of just doing the opposite of every other firm out there. And rather than being an archaeologist, which is what most CPAs are, just dig up the past, how do I be sort of forward looking? And it's basic. The things that I did are not novel ideas in other industries. They just happen to be unique in the CPA space. So grown that. Last year, we were rated one of the 10 best run mid-sized firms in the US. And that's where I really learned about how many of the tools that I developed don't apply for small business and really started to understand this whole idea of financial certainty.
Nice. There's a lot in there I could dig into.
Sure. Yeah, I just threw a lot out there.
Yeah, no, perfect. And so the archaeology versus future oriented. Tell me about that in terms of what the work that you do.
Yeah. And I get super passionate about this. So stop me if I like wax too philosophic here.
I want the passion. That's why I do this, right?
So 42,000 firms in the US, if you have 10 people, you're the 400th biggest. So really most CPA firms are one or two people. And so most small business owners are working with a one or two person shop. And they're one or two person shops because the stereotypes are largely true about accountants, which are heads down, independent contributors, fairly transactional. Every once in a while, you meet someone who's a little bit more relational, but most are very kind of, let me work on the thing in front of me. So what I've heard from the, 3,000 calls I've done, sales type calls, has been uniform for the last 10 years, is that same thing where I feel like my account's a nice person. They seem nice. I think they're doing a pretty good job. And I feel like we're always talking about the past, and I ask them these questions and I never really get an answer. Mm-hmm. And then I go talk to my friends and they bring up stuff and I'm kind of wondering, well, am I doing that? And I'll go ask my accountant and they'll tell me like, oh, don't worry about it. Or I got you taken care of. Mm-hmm. So there's sort of that always looking in the past mindset type of approach. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, trained archaeologists are going to know where to dig. Mm-hmm. So they're going to probably find stuff you wouldn't know to find. Mm-hmm. That's not really preparing you for the future.
Sure.
Right. So that was sort of the initial genesis of the idea, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
No, absolutely. And, you know, a couple of things that come to my mind hearing you describe that and are, you know, I was at a seminar and part of the seminar involved, you know, how to get your financial stuff together. And, you know, one of the things that was brought forth was, you know, you need to find an investing vehicle that actually matches with your personality, or understand it that if it doesn't match your personality, it's going to be harder for you to do. And again, you're the expert, so you can push back on that. But for me, you know, it was kind of like a mind blow, because when I read books or when I've been to other things, like you said, it's kind of been this head down, push forward, you know, kind of non-relational approach, right? It's about, buy low and sell high, you know, spend less money than what you make, you know, all those basic things. And, you know, and once I kind of, and he gave some examples, you know, like for him, the person that was talking was, you know, for me, day trading isn't going to be it, because there's no way that I'm going to get up in the morning and sit in front of a computer screen and just sit there and just wait for the opportunity. You know what I mean? Right. But for somebody else, that may be their jam. Right. And so, thoughts about that, about, you know, ways of finances fitting your personality within reason. Right. I mean, if you're totally out of whack, well, you're going to have to get yourself in line, but thoughts about that.
Yeah. You're speaking my language. So, my love language here. So, it's my belief that small business owners need a completely different operating system than big businesses for mm-hmm. making decisions. And embarrassingly, this took me a long time to figure out. Because when I started the firm, a lot of the recommendations, initially I thought, okay, I've worked in all these large companies and I'm going to take that expertise and I'm going to bring it to small business, and they're not getting access to all these tools. And so this is going to be really powerful for them. And I'd have these conversations and business owners would say, yeah, I need this. I want a budget. I want a forecast. I want these dashboards with key performance indicators. Cool. Yeah. I know. This is why you need it. This is what I did at Microsoft. They build it out. They never look at it. And, my default inclination is to go, I did something wrong. Mm. I'm a recovering people pleaser. So my default is like, okay, there's something I didn't do to communicate this well. Mm-hmm. This isn't digestible. Like, what is it that I need to do better? So the first four years of the business was me repeatedly going, what is it that I need to do better? Why was I able to be so successful in these other companies? And now I'm serving these small business owners and I'm not getting any traction. And then I realized that the contextual framework was completely wrong. So, and this is a little bit of me waxing philosophic, so if I get too off the rails, you know, stop me. When you're a publicly traded company, as a CEO, you have to maximize shareholder value. You have a fiduciary responsibility. You maximize. Makes sense. It's capitalistic. Cool. Maximize, have the most amount of money, staff, etc. When you're a business owner, you have to optimize. What's the most efficient path forward? Because you have all these constraints. I mean, it's you, or maybe you even have a team of 30. That's still a small team compared to public, you know, Fortune 500 companies that have thousands of people. So you're wearing 15 hats, probably. You're the director of, like, I'm the director of HR of one company. No one would ever hire me as the director of HR. Like, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm like a 1, but it's sufficient for that company, right? So I'm wearing all these hats. So optimize. Well, all the tools out there are based on maximizing.
Sure.
We have to build new tools to optimize. Mm-hmm. So that was, it may sound philosophic, but that was this sort of slap in the face moment. It's like, okay, well, what are we optimizing towards?
Sure.
Well, we're optimizing towards what I call our profit priorities, the things that we as a business owner want to fund. And we've got a core set of priorities. Everyone has pay off debt, fund reserves, fund retirement. And then we've got our personal preferences. But we got to figure out and define what it is that we want to fund. And that's what we're optimizing towards. So the business really exists to serve you, you as the business owner. Mm-hmm. And so every action should get you closer to the things you want. That's what I constantly am telling clients. Ironically, a lot of the actions clients are taking getting them further away from the things that they want, unintentionally, unintended consequences. But part of every action getting you closer to things you want is playing your game. Who are you? When you build out the spreadsheet to maximize for a big company, there isn't a line item that has to do with your cognitive burden. Mm-hmm. That's what's missing from almost every small business owner's formula is their own cognitive burden, cognitive load of having to manage this task or try to be someone that they're not and play somebody else's game. We were talking about basketball before we started the interview.
Right.
I learned this from my coach that if I look at my default style of play in my default sport, which was basketball, I wanted to be a shooting guard, aggressive, not the most physically talented person. That's my default style in business too. And when I get too far away from that default style, I'm pretty unhappy and I start making pretty bad decisions. Mm-hmm. And also if I lean too much into it, I also start. So it's just a little bit of a balance. It takes time to calibrate. But even Michael Jordan passed the ball to Steve Kerr every once in a while. Right? If you watch The Last Dance.
Yeah.
So it's sort of, again, I get passionate about this stuff. And there's a lot that I could say and keep going. But
no, I'll jump in.
Framework, and you've got to understand what you're optimizing towards. Yeah. And then you have to play your game because it's you. It's
your business. So a similar thing, you know, one thing that I've done over the years is I'm trained as a counselor. I have a PhD in counseling from Oregon State, and I've operated private practice counseling since about 2006. Mm-hmm. And what I do and what I did is show people how to build private practice with cash paying clients. Mm-hmm. Right. And I taught for about 6 years too. So I was working full time and I was teaching graduate school. And one of my first questions when I'm working with somebody, either if they're a student kind of at the end of their program of study, which is one of the courses I taught was practicum and internship, or when I'm taking on a new supervisee and helping them launch their private practice, it's why are you doing this? Mm-hmm. You know, why do you want to be a counselor? What impact do you want to have? And I'm sure you have the same similar examples from people who are trying to, you know, launch a business, but most counselors will say something to the effect of, well, you know, I'm pretty easygoing and my friends like to talk to me and I'm just, you know, want to help people, you know, have better lives. And I just would kind of cut them like, yeah, you and 10,000 other counselors that are being cranked out every single year, right? Why do you want to be a counselor? Yeah. And you got to build from there. Otherwise you get lost in the shuffle. You're just another counselor that's hanging a shingle. And then you wonder why nobody's coming through your door because you don't know who you are. You don't know why you want to do this. You don't know what the impact is that you want to have. You just think that you went to school, graduated and hung the shingle that people are just going to flow through the door. And that's just not how it works. So they build out all the things. Like in our world, you build out your fancy website, you get your profile out there on, you know, Psychology Today, and then you still sit back and you wonder, how come this isn't working?
That's the maximize framework. I've got sort of these 13 core principles that I teach folks on how to process business issues, because I tell them, yeah, I'm a finance guy. Every business decision is actually a finance. It's a money decision. You can't separate them. Mm-hmm. You want to hire someone, that costs money. You want to do marketing, that costs money. They're all business decisions. They're also finance decisions. So I have this core set of 13 principles. And I always say, first we optimize, then we maximize. Mm-hmm. Maximize in the small business context is I got to get my website. I got to get on Psychology Today. I got to get a location. I got to get, business cards. I got to, all of these things. Now
I got to join the Chamber of Commerce.
And it's like, okay, well, what is the number one lead domino thing you need to do? Like, let's just do that. Mm-hmm. Because that is we don't have enough data to know that all the other things are going to be worthwhile. Right. So we got to do the one thing, the main thing, and then get some data and then move to the next thing after that. So there's a tendency to try to do everything.
And kind of, again, before the call, we were talking about some of the things that I had tapped into that you have put out there for people to consume. And it's this idea that, finances, business can be akin to, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you got to have enough, right? And so what I tell people, what's worked for me and what I've been able to teach others is the thing that you need to do is that you need to connect with two people every single day that you exist and why you exist. And that can be a phone call, a text, an email. It doesn't have to, it's COVID era right now, so it's harder to be face to face. But if you were to get good at making those connections every single day, it's only a matter of time before you're going to have so many people that you don't know what to do with to come in through your door. But a lot of people don't heed that and they don't do it.
Yeah. I go through this process. I call it the case framework: compile, analyze, strategize, execute. So, and I try to, what I've seen is that most business owners go to strategize. Here's all the things we could do. And then maybe they don't do anything else other than that, but they got a bunch of ideas. Cool. I could do this. If that happens, then I'm going to do these things. Awesome. And then money is going to come from that. Or they're really quick to execute, which is they just do something. And we skip over the compile and analyze pieces. So compile, get all the data. So you mentioned kind of the Maslow's hierarchy, and what I'll do is go through and say, okay, what is this type of business? What is this business? What do we do? Okay. What's the nature of it? Is it transactional or relational? Okay. Well, it's like a business, like a therapy business. That's a relational business, right? I know there's rules around what type of relationship, but it's one-on-one. And okay, well, if I had a relationship with someone, like, how do I go about building more relationships? Mm-hmm. Because it's a relationship-based business. And so then you can analyze. And what you end up finding when you follow kind of this path is that you already have the answers. You just, if you borrow it from other domains. Mm-hmm. So one of my core principles, back to sort of the 13 core that I have, is that we bias T-learning over I-learning. And I stole this from computer science, which is actually an example of T-learning versus I-learning. I-learning, for your listeners' benefits, I-learning is this idea that we are super domain dependent. So I'm going to drill, if I have an accounting firm, I'm going to drill down on what accounting firms do. If I'm going to onboard new clients, I'm going to go see what other accounting firms do. And that's going to be my basis for everything. T-learning is this idea that I can pull from other industries or natural law, and I can apply it to my specific industry. So if I think about onboarding, I could look at other accounting firms, or I could go, who's the best at onboarding? Southwest Airlines. Okay, what do? That's interesting. What makes their process so good? Or onboarding, what's that like in natural law? Dating. Okay, well, what do I know about dating? I already know things about dating. I already know things about getting on an airplane. And those are examples, but we can take those and apply it to our specific problem. Mm-hmm. So we already know how to build relationships. We have a relationship-based business. We can't in COVID one-on-one, but how do we mimic that same thing? It's mm-hmm. a podcast. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like networking. So most of the time people have the answers, are just trying to create something new.
So I may have missed it. Can you walk me back through T-learning versus I-learning and what the examples of those are?
Sure. So I-learning, excuse me, I took a drink of water. And
wrong pipe.
So I-learning is getting very domain dependent, meaning I have a problem, say my car breaks down. I use the accounting firm, I have a marketing firm. Right. I'm only looking at what other marketing firms do. Mm-hmm. T-learning is expanding to go, I can borrow from anywhere. Gotcha. And take it to that.
Yeah. Yeah, there's so many examples of that, right? Where you have an industry that, you know, either is plateaued or they have a wicked problem, and somehow, some way they'll bring in this person from a total different industry and they'll come in and be like, oh, well, why don't you do this? Right. Exactly. And then people say, you can't do that. That's crazy. You know what I mean? And yeah, why don't you do that? And all of a sudden, boom, they hit, do whatever they're supposed to trying to be doing there.
Yeah. When I learned this from one of my mentors, which is when the answer is not readily apparent, invert, just do the opposite. Mm-hmm. So I come back to that time and time again. It's like, the thing I'm trying to do is not working. I'm trying to get people for my therapy practice and I'm only doing things online. Well, when the answer is not readily apparent, what if I just did the opposite? Mm-hmm. And as a thought exercise, at least, then you have, now you have opened the door to a much broader range of solution sets. Mm-hmm. That's how I came up with the roadmap process we do for our CPA firm, which was, what if I just did the opposite of what every other CPA firm was doing? Okay. And started with the most extreme, and then they got the range of issues, and then eventually you narrow it into the best fit solution. Mm-hmm. But just as simple as just thinking about the opposite, mm-hmm, is a good way to get unstuck.
Absolutely. And Dan, back to case. So it's compile, analyze,
strategize, execute.
Gotcha.
So it's, I've trained myself to be pretty linear in processing issues. Even though I have an accounting degree and I'm a CPA, I don't consider myself to be an accountant. I know I do accounting things, but a lot of times folks want to go, oh, you're an accountant, you must be very linear, and all the stereotypes kind of come about. I'm more of the entrepreneur that has this tug of war going on of things I want to be doing and emotions and all those sort of things. And then the practical side of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I try to be linear in my way of processing issues, because the thing, the kind of universal thing I've seen across the maybe thousands of businesses I've looked at over the last 10 years is that most business owners think when they start their business that they're just going to keep working at it and cash is just going to pour in. And there's going to be this like kind of exponential growth as long as I keep at it. And then what actually happens is that it's all over the place. Oh, I just had my best month ever. Then 2 or 3 months later, it's like, oh, I'm almost out of cash. How'd that happen? The thing that's going up and up and up and up is risk. I mentioned my derivatives background in my former life. Most business owners, in order to grow their cash flow, take on a ton of risk. Debt is an obvious example. The way they structure their cash flows. So maybe they've got a lot of fixed costs, but all their revenue is variable. It's a huge risk. You can go out of business overnight. If you've got a high fixed cost business, you need to make sure you got a lot of revenue that's recurring, right? Otherwise, you got a misalignment. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of risks that get built into this system over time. And for two reasons. One, business owners aren't trained to identify asymmetric risks, risks where the upside is substantially greater than the downside. And that's more of a technical thing. And I have frameworks. You can build a framework for identifying asymmetric risk. You don't have to be Bill Gates or Elon Musk. They just intuitively find those opportunities. Mm-hmm. The other is that, they keep changing the way that they process issues, and you can't compare. It would be like, I know you coach youth sports, basketball. We were talking about this before. it would be like if you changed your coaching philosophy between games. And then you looked at it and you're like, okay, this game, this time we won by 15 points and the next game we lost by 10. You know, what happened? You'd have, before you could really answer that, you'd have to dig into all the things you changed just around your decision-making.
Yep.
Business owners keep constantly changing their frameworks for how they process issues. Oh, I'm going to 10X it now. Oh no, I'm going to be, I just hired this person. I'm going to use their philosophies. Oh, now I'm going to do internet marketing. They keep changing. And so you can't compare the results. And so you start drawing all these conclusions about what your business is doing that are wrong because you can't actually control for all the different variables. It's too multivariable. We need a unifying operating system so that we can actually identify the cause of the issues in our business.
And I, there's so many corollaries with, again, the work that I've done historically, just in being trained as a clinician, a counselor, but I want to stick with what you just said there. So, meaning, so when somebody was going to work with you and they're, you know, and they're a business owner, entrepreneur, is it part of your process then to help them build, you know, a way to analyze what they're doing specifically for them? You know, so is it unique? Does it look a little bit different every single time you do it? Or is there, you know, a basic frame that you use every single time? What's that look like when you work with folks?
Yeah, really good question. I have a framework, which I call the path to financial certainty. And we've got 13 core principles that we use to evaluate issues. The reason why we have principles is because almost every question they're going to ask is a preference-based question. Mm-hmm. I mean, you probably experienced this in your counseling. I've done a lot of counseling over the last 13, 14 years, and the various therapists I've had are routinely pointed out, well, you're kind of arguing about a preference. So many of the things that we try to view as binary, you can't go and Google and get the right answer to whether or not you should grow your business. So much of it is preference. So we have these core set of principles to basically consistently evaluate the preference-based decisions. But we have a map, and it starts with defining your priorities. What are your core priorities and what are your preference-based priorities? If you just ask someone, what are your goals? I've done this hundreds of times. What are your goals or what are your priorities? They will give you a money or a time response. Oh, I want to make X amount, or I want more time. Like, okay, well, those are outcomes. I want to know, like, what is it that you're trying to fund to cause this thing to occur, right? And so I divide it into, everyone has core priorities. Meaning there's three that I've found that are universal. Have a certain amount of reserves, pay off debt if they have any, and fund their retirement. For most business owners though, entrepreneurs, the retirement is amount of money to not have to work, but I probably still will, but I want to do it by choice. So those are the three core priorities. The amount that you need for each varies person by person, but those are core priorities.
Sure.
Yep. We take the core priorities plus our preference-based priorities, the things that are unique to you. Could be anything. I've got two young daughters. I'd like to be able to, you know, help them with college, pay for modest weddings. Although, you know, my youngest says she wants to be a fancy lady, so I don't know how modest they're going to be, but, you know. The combination of the core plus the preference-based priorities, that's your unique definition of financial certainty, your definition of wealth. Once we take those priorities, we write them down and we put them in order, and they have to be in order because we have to optimize, not maximize. So easiest way to help clients start answering their questions is go, what's the number one thing we want to solve? Once they stop trying to solve for six things, suddenly we have answers. We can move forward. But we can take the priorities, we put them in order, and then I go, when do you want to achieve each of these by? Give me a date, and then how much does it cost? So priority, date, cost. You want 10 more hours a week of time? There's a cost. You can buy 10 more hours a week. You can outsource, you can make less, you can buy effectively 10 more hours a week. once we have that and we know what your current assets are and your current cash flow, I can calculate and tell you, can you fund all those priorities in the timelines that you set? If not, how much more cash do you need? I built a whole app. It's called the Certainty app. And part of what it does is it allows you to see, based off your assets and your priorities and all of the factors that you've defined, are you making enough? And if not, how much more? Mm-hmm. The assumption is always more, 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 more.
Right.
But we don't actually know how much more to do fund all the things that we want.
Yeah.
Once I know, oh, go ahead. Sorry.
And so I want to pause you there too. So an app is a dashboard, right? Yep. And again, correct me if I'm wrong. And you just made the statement earlier that most people set that up and never look at it. And however, when you set it up the way that you did, you're much more excited to look at it, right? Because it's actually building towards your number one priority. Is that right? You know,
what I believe is a unique thing we've done with the Certainty app and what we do for clients on a one-on-one basis is to show them how the actions of their business magnify their priorities or get them closer. So you're probably familiar with this Parkinson's law. You know, if you got 2 hours to do something, it takes 2 hours. If you got five, it takes five.
Right.
In money, the same thing applies. If someone makes $100,000, they go to $500,000, they go to $1,000,000. Somehow they're just as broke as they were because their lifestyle goes up. I want to show people, here's how much I can save you in tax. Here's how I can re-engineer your cash flow. Here's how I can do all this stuff. And once I take that cash and I allocate it all to your priorities, here's how many years that cuts off. Right. Rather than you having to just make more, what if we look at, how about we just keep more? And I'm not talking about shaming you about going to Starbucks. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about strategic through all the different strategies out there, reallocate it to funding that number one thing.
Yeah.
Oftentimes we can lock in the number one thing pretty soon. And then what we find is the number two thing isn't actually the new number one, it's something else.
Right.
So again, if we get too caught up, really, I just want to know your number one thing and then know the rest, but they don't have to be in accurate order.
So the theme there, again, from the work that I do as a coach, is a lot of people sell themselves short. A lot of people, you know, it's kind of the, you know, one of the Tony Robbins, you know, mantras that people will overestimate what they can do in a year, but underestimate what they can do in 10 years. But once you kind of get a system like that in place and you're clicking things off, then all of a sudden you're like, whoa, you know, this whole new world kind of opens up to you. So I like that part about focus on the first priority, but then number two usually isn't what number two ends up being. And I think it's because people's dreams can be shallow and they've underestimated, they aren't optimizing. Right. So that makes a lot of sense in just in the work that I do with people as well.
I worked with someone earlier this year who told me that their number one priority is that they wanted to pay off their house. And then at some point they thought they might want to move to California. They were living in Ohio, I think. So we go through their whole plan and we build out all their priorities. We assign all their assets. We look at their cash flow. We do all the tax optimization, eliminate their risk, re-engineer their cash flow. It's like, I can pay off your house right now. We can fund it. And then this weird thing happens when people vote with their money, which is that then they realize what their real priority is, which was she actually wanted to move to California. It's like, but the notion of what are you supposed to do? You know, the should statements, and I'm playing in your zone of genius probably.
Right.
Which is, usually people tell me what they think they have to tell me, which is the core priorities. They think they have to tell me that they're going to pay off debt, they're going to fund retirement, and they're going to have a certain amount of reserves. Right. And then there's the gut check moment when you can actually do that. And for some reason you don't want to, it's because it's not your number one priority. It's really that simple. Mm-hmm. You don't want to do it because it's not your number one priority. That's fine. It's a preference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Love it.
You move to California.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. There you go. There's a book that I'm sure you're familiar with Steve Sims, cause I know, you know, and Blue Fishing talks about that, right? Where even, you know, ask somebody, tell me what your bucket list is. What's the number one thing on your bucket list, right? And Steve will teach you in the book that it's usually not it, right? And so and you just kind of have to keep pressing through with somebody to actually get to what it is that they want to, you know. And, you know, one example is, I want to be at the Seahawks 50-yard line, you know, tickets. Okay, really? That's it? Yep. You know, and working somebody back, I want to play catch with Russell Wilson before the game starts, right? Now that would be it. Oh, okay. Now how do we do that?
Right. Yeah, there is that that sort of, what am I allowed to say, or how judged am right. I if I say this thing out loud? Or right. I wouldn't want someone to think that I'm egocentric, mm-hmm. or I don't have humility if I say this stuff out loud. To which I say to folks, play your game. Your business exists to fund your what you want, your priorities. Mm-hmm. There's no right or wrong, you know, ignoring ethical and legal issues. There's no right or wrongs. Mm-hmm. You're taking on risk by being self-employed. So let's be honest about the things that we truly want to fund. I think you can only do that by having some sort of methodology that forces it, mm-hmm. whether it's working with someone like you, one-on-one, whether it's my methodology, mm-hmm. something, some way to isolate all the dopamine hits from social media and all the other things of telling you what you're supposed to say and do.
Right. So back to that piece, Dan, about purpose-driven to financial certainty, right? So expand on, you know, I know you've done it a little bit, but I want you to kind of really zero in on, you know, what certainty typically looks like for folks when they're in this journey.
Yeah, so the concept of financial certainty has been interesting to me for a number of years, because I noticed that in my previous life, there was concern about, am I going to be okay? Am I going to run out of money? Mm-hmm. And then I saw the same thing with folks just getting started and everywhere in between. And so it's just the pattern recognition of seeing the same thing over and over again. And so this notion of, okay, what people really want is financial certainty. And then I heard this equation that anxiety equals uncertainty times powerlessness. Heard that equation before?
But I love it.
and it really, it spoke to me. I'm blanking on the name of who came up with that, but it really resonated with me, this idea that uncertainty and powerlessness kind of amplify each other. And I'm someone who has had anxiety problems before that I've had to work through, and sort of on this path. And so, yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. And it's an equation. I'm a math nerd of sorts. So I thought, okay, well, I can just drop financial in here. So mm-hmm. instead of just anxiety equals uncertainty times mm-hmm. powerlessness, I can go financial anxiety equals financial uncertainty times financial powerlessness. Mm-hmm. It's like, wow, okay. So what I'm really trying to do, that whole felt sense of, am I going to be okay? That's the anxiety in my contextual framework. Mm-hmm. That underneath all that is some worry about the future. And so what I need to do is increase their level of certainty and give them more power over their finances. So how do I do that? Well, the uncertainty piece is the methodology, the showing them, let's get your priorities down. Let's put a date, let's put a dollar value. Let's look at your assets. Let's just tell you how much more you need. Because mm-hmm. now it's not uncertain anymore. There's risk that exists. But now we have a number. We've taken this weird multivariable equation of what we want to have with our life, and we put it down to numbers where we can actually solve for it. So now we have more certainty. We know what we need to make. Mm-hmm. Now it's a matter of figuring out how to do it. The power side of things is a combination of having the principles, the 13 that I've referenced, to how to consistently work through preference-based decisions, how to reorient to every action needs to get me closer to the things that I want. And, I need to look for asymmetric risk opportunities. Most business owners are making bets where there's little upside or there's tremendous downside. Mm-hmm. We want, Jeff Bezos says, if you told me I could get 100x return and the probability was 10%, I'd do that every time. And the point is, it's an asymmetric risk. Mm-hmm. I bet $1 if there was a chance I'm going to make 100. Mm-hmm. A lot of business owners are betting $1 and there's a chance they're going to be homeless.
Right.
It's asymmetric. It's just for the wrong direction, right? So we got to have these different tools. And within those different set of tools, what I realized was the forecasts and KPIs, all the things that I was doing for big businesses will never work for small business owners because they're making decisions based off what's in their bank account mm-hmm. and their Stripe account. So I built this whole framework around how to use your business accounts for decision-making. And I've got this whole matrix and all that for methodology for how to do it. And it's based off the mental accounting bias. So there's the Khan Academy thing on mental accounting bias and how the way that money is bucketed impacts our decision-making. Mm-hmm. And so simply by breaking our money into different risk buckets. So if we took our money and we said, well, let's carve out a reserve account for payroll and have a set of rules. And let's carve out an account for operating expenses and have mm-hmm. a set of rules. And let's carve out for investments, anything new. And let's set some rules about mm-hmm. how much we're going to keep in those accounts. And there are rules based off activity. So if the business goes up, then I add to my reserves. It goes down, I subtract. Mm-hmm. Now, and this is all on the Certainty app, now what I'm doing is I'm looking at balances to decide, hey, can I hire someone? I don't know. What do we have in the payroll reserve? Mm-hmm. Is it overfunded, underfunded? How long would it take us to fund it with this new hire? Now we combine that with the frameworks and we're able to take a preference-based decision and have a more concrete methodology to answer that. Yeah. So that was sort of, so then I started building out, and I could go on and on about that, but started building out tools to address the powerlessness side of things that actually just align with the way that people already make decisions. Mm-hmm. If you're just making decisions based off what's in your bank account, then how do I allow you to do that? Rather than tell you not to do that, how do I just make it so that you're going to make the right decisions more times than not? Mm-hmm. We've been building out this tool that's in the Certainty app called Readiness, which is just this idea of how much risk does your business have? And so are you ready to do something new? Mm-hmm. We always assume we're ready to do something new. I got this great idea. Most elusive answers for business owners are, Daddy, is a thing worth doing? Watch. Sorry, my daughter is interrupting. Yes.
No worries. Family friendly show.
But it's just through the infield.
You're good. Nope, no worries.
Sorry about that.
No worries. You're being a good dad. Can't fault you for that.
I was just saying we built out this tool or this readiness thing because the most elusive questions that business owners really ask are, I've got an idea. Is it worth doing just in general? Is this mm-hmm. a good idea? And if so, is it worth doing now? And so we always assume anytime we have a good idea, we should do it. Sometimes it's a good idea, but now is the worst possible time to do it. And so we've taken basically build out some through machine learning and algorithms to look at your cash activity and your revenue activity to basically determine how much risk your business has right now to tell you in one score out of 100 whether or not you're ready to do something new. Hmm. So that's sort of just this idea of how do we address the lack of power mm-hmm. that we feel. And if we can compartmentalize it or decompartmentalize into, is this an uncertainty issue or is this a power issue?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love how you've operationalized those things because there's, you know, the things that people get sold on are stories and examples, you know, technology that worked at one point in time right? Which I know you and Nick are big on, but there's no guarantee that that's going to do anything for you in the here and now.
100%. 100%. I always say you have to rely, when it comes to revenue, or you need a preponderance of data. Mm-hmm. So you can have a great idea and you can build out some really cool spreadsheets, millionaire math, and go, well, if I just get X percent of the market and I sell it for this amount and I do that, then I have millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, no, those equations are correct. Those numbers do extrapolate out to $1 million, but you actually have to go out and do it. So I coach people to bias micro steps, meaning, and this is part of trying to create asymmetric risk, is going, rather than assuming that someone's going to buy, what if I just ask, before I go build everything out and maximize and build the website and the funnel and blah, 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 what if I just ask? So at the start of, I'll give you an example. At the start of COVID, I thought about building out an education system, a financial education system for kids. So I'm like, okay, my kids are going to be home a bunch. I want them to start learning about this. Mm-hmm. And so I floated it out there and just said, would anybody be interested? Mm-hmm. And within 7 days, I had about 1,000 people sign up on a wait list.
I was one of them.
And then we went, okay. So, and then we had criteria. If at least 100 people put their name on the list, then we'll do the next thing. So we got 1,000. So then the next thing was, no funnel or anything, just a Google Doc. Hey, here's what we're thinking. Here's the cost. If you're interested, here's a checkout page. But we're not going to do anything unless at least 10 people sign up. And so what happened is nobody bought the program. Now, we had a bunch of other things going on. We probably could have got sales, but we'd already decided, look, if this is the process, we're going to take these micro steps and get data. And the data has to validate us, giving us permission to proceed to the next thing. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise we're trading off other opportunities. We can't just do everything. And so we ended up saving ourselves. Previous version of myself would have built out the whole funnels, marketing campaign, you know, done the whole maximize thing and maybe had no sales. Mm-hmm. Instead, we validated pretty quickly. And so we're just taking these micro steps. Mm-hmm.
That's powerful. Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, I remember when that phase on the front end of COVID. So yeah, absolutely.
I still think it was a good idea. It just wasn't a good idea then.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Both because people didn't buy it, but also I didn't have the time to.
Yeah. If you were going to put time in it, you were going to have to pull time from something else, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
So one of the things that I heard you say that I learned too, again, from that same seminar that I mentioned earlier, was you have to, if you're going to be financially secure, you need to live by, I heard it as live by ratios. You said live by rules, same thing. It was the rules versus a lot of people, even if they buy into the budget, right? You got to have a budget. And so, but then when odd things hit us that are not accounted for in the budget, then we don't know what to do because we don't have rules set up. We don't have ratios set up. So even good case scenario, I got a pay raise. Well, that's not accounted in my budget. So then I just blow the extra money, right? Mm-hmm. It's not accounted for versus when you live by rules or ratios. No, like you said, if we have surplus, we do this. When we don't, we do that. But I want to highlight that for people, because a lot of people think it's all about the budget, live by a budget versus, yes, you need a budget. That's important. You need to know what's coming in and going out, but these rules are really is what's going to get you to where you want to be. Is that right? Did I hear that right?
Yeah. It's sort of a couple different directions I want to go with this. I think that the data says that you get 80% of the benefit of sleep just by laying down. And then there's the other 20% is from getting the REM and deep sleep and all of that. Mm-hmm. You get 80% of the financial benefit by pre-planning and setting boundaries in advance. Mm-hmm. The budget is just catching things later. It's not a preventative control. It doesn't stop you from buying stuff. Mm-hmm. Right. It just measure it. So I got 80% of the benefit of money conversations with my wife by setting up separate bank accounts for what's and defining the rules in advance. It's like, okay, we're going to have a vacation bank account. We're going to have a kid's bank account. We have a few other things, and each paycheck automatically gets deposited into those accounts. Mm-hmm. And so then, can we afford to buy something for the kids? Well, I don't know what's in the kid's bank account. I'm not, those are the rules we define right. in advance. Now, if right. the account's zero, then we have to, then we get to opt in to refunding the account. So I don't say, no, you can't do it. It's just, I'm trying to create scenarios where I have to opt in. Mm-hmm. We have so many things passively happening in our businesses that we haven't created the mechanisms to have to opt into something bad. Mm-hmm. We find out.
Right. 80%. Yes. I remember you teaching on opt-in versus opt-out, right? It's so easy to opt into somebody else's scheme, but we don't set up our own schemes that are equally as easy to opt in for our own benefit.
Yeah, my assumption is that, and I had my mentor, when the second meeting, he asked me, what am I going to, if you ever hit it big, what am I going to have to worry about you doing? Is it going to be sex, drugs, or alcohol?
Wow.
Right? So we had this conversation about it. And the relevance of that is that there's power in knowing like what your vices are. Mm-hmm. And so you got to set up the controls to make sure you don't find yourself in that position. So my assumption is that I'm going to make bad decisions. I don't assume that I'm mm-hmm. going to be perfect all the time.
Right.
So I assume that I'm going to get blind Parkinson's law. I'm going to want more things. And some days I'm going to be tired and emotional, and I'm going to want to take shortcuts. And so I'm just trying to not assume that I'm always going to operate at my peak. I'm going to assume that I'm going to usually operate at my worst. Mm-hmm. I tell people, don't assume you're going to do everything on your own. Assume that you're going to pay someone to do it. And if the ROI is still there, then do it. And if you end up doing it on your own, the ROI just gets better. But don't assume you're going to do everything. Assume the lower end. Mm-hmm. So I make assumptions to rig the game to win of when it comes to money in particular, but other business decisions, that I'm going to be weak, that I'm going to be tired and prone to overextend or over rotate. Mm-hmm. And so I want to make sure that I have to opt into that. If I don't want to go on Facebook anymore, I'm going to change the password to a 27-digit random thing. Because then I got to go through seven steps to get back into Facebook. You know, so it's like, force myself to have to keep opting in, knowing that I'm not always going to be disciplined.
Yeah.
So that's what I try and encourage folks to do, is set up the systems to opt in.
Absolutely. Love it. Dan, this part of what I do with this show is I do talk about mindset, and obviously we've been talking about all kinds of aspects here, and I think they all correlate to people's money mindset. But when I say that phrase to you, somebody's mindset specifically around finances, what comes to your mind? Like what are the things that you are seeing, or what are the patterns that you come across consistently when you're working with people in the work that you do?
Well, I have a lot of things that come to mind, and a lot of it comes down back to the rigging the game to win mm-hmm. idea, which is I don't assume I try to remain as neutral as possible. Some days I can be positive, some days I'm going to be negative. Ideally trying to get to at least neutral, because I know I'm not going to do anything bad mm-hmm. when I'm neutral. So in terms of the money mindset, where I think people can put themselves in the kind of the in the bad position, is bouncing back and forth between the rigid chaos thing. You know, so it's I'm going to put myself on a really, really strict budget and I'm going to do the rice and beans thing. Mm-hmm. I'm a yo-yo diet basically on my right. finances. So I'm going to go super extreme. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say no to everything. I'm going to, not pay myself for a while. Right. And then guess what happens? Then now all of a sudden, as soon as we get some money, it's like, we got the Mercedes, we got the house, we got the boat, we got all this stuff because we've been holding back for so long. Mm-hmm. And so to me, the sort of the rigid chaos thing is where there's the biggest financial burden. Mm-hmm. I'm just looking for consistency. There's a saying in accounting, consistency over accuracy. You think you'd always want the books to be accurate, but it's almost worse if you're inconsistent and you're recording things to all kinds of different buckets and you can't compare. So in the finance world, consistency. Trying to time the market. We know if you try and time the market, you end up failing. Right. You just want to consistently be in the market, you're more likely to win.
Nice. So it's almost you're educating and guarding people against, you know, this tendency to go rigid and then experience the peril of being chaotic then.
Yeah. So again, another thing that just comes to mind, if it's okay, back to stop losses. Mm-hmm. So in my previous life, derivatives hedging, the people who are really world-class at trading, what they were good at is getting out of loss position transactions. It's like, this thing's underwater by 20%. I'm going to sell it because I know that I can find another position that's going to get me a return faster. Mm-hmm. So they lock in losses and move on. Mm-hmm. Most traders and most business owners, make generalities, have such strong loss aversion that we stay in these positions and all the sunk cost fallacy and all these other biases that exist. And so to me, we have the rules, we have the stop losses, because then it triggers an action. And that action is, how do I get into a better position? Mm-hmm. Not how do I ride this thing out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, and that's an important distinguisher too, because again, in the personal development world, you know, we're going to preach and tell people the only way to lose is to quit, right? But that doesn't mean that you don't, like you're saying, you know, stop losses. Okay, what you're doing isn't working. So what you're not quitting is you're not quitting on you, right? You might have to quit on that specific vehicle, right? Or quit going down that road, like you said, because it's not getting you where you want to go. So stop loss is a beautiful principle to insert there, right?
Yeah, it's not giving up. It's finding the more efficient path forward.
Right. Optimizing, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Yeah. Yep. So we're not giving up. We're just repurposing. We're reallocating our money.
Mm-hmm. So I know, just by the feedback that I've gotten from folks that listen to my show, there are entrepreneurs, they're burgeoning entrepreneurs, fledgling entrepreneurs. Give them some encouragement, you know, for those that you maybe haven't made the leap, but they've got an idea, or maybe they've made the leap and now they're experiencing, you know, the financial anxiety. How would you encourage them in today's climate?
What I would tell them is that it's not an all or nothing game. That's incredibly dangerous. Usually the answer is both. Mm. So it's not, do I quit my job and be an entrepreneur? Or if I'm an entrepreneur, I can't do all these other things. How do I split my aces? Mm. If you got two aces, you know, and you're gambling, maybe you want to split those, right? So generally speaking, let's look for opportunities where we can split our aces. We don't have to go all in. Mm-hmm. We don't want to burn the bridges or burn the
ships, right?
Let's look for the opportunities where we can do both until we don't have to. Or so I did the day job thing while I got the business going. And then when I had a little bit of a nest egg, then I started doing it full time. It wasn't kind of all or nothing. Mm-hmm. And then I would say that you don't have to become somebody else. Mm-hmm. So play your game. I went to this Jesuit university. We learned about, I tell people I'm not Catholic, but I learned about Catholic guilt when I went, and all these things about what we're supposed to do, we should be doing. Mm-hmm. And a staunch advocate for being ethical and trying to evolve and grow as a person and become more and more self-aware about how, who you are, you know, close the gap between who you say you are and what you do. But you don't have to be a different person. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm clearly distinguishing
that. No, absolutely. Yeah.
To be successful, it doesn't mean changing your game, the core essence of who you are.
Yeah.
It means closing the gap on the self-awareness and trying to create the right boundaries and the stop losses and the principles and the ways just to make sure that you don't go down the dark roads. Mm-hmm. We all have our own dark roads. So I'm just trying to block off those streets, yeah. Stay off of the sketchy, dark, poorly lit places and stay on the road where we're going to, you know, have the fastest path to, right. to success.
Yeah. One of the things that I tell people is there may or may not be a perfect way, but there's definitely your way. And the more that you, you know, figure that out and push it forward, the better off you're going to be, right?
100%. Yeah. It's your business. Mm-hmm. You get to set the rules. So I would just keep reminding yourself of that.
Yeah. Absolutely. That,
you know, there's certain industry guidelines you have to follow, but you get to make up the business rules.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Dan, we could keep going. I know, but, it's time to wrap it up. I know that you've made an impact. You've made an impact over the years on me, whether you've realized it or not, you do now, 'cause I'm talking to you. I've learned a ton, from you and through your generosity. I mean, there's a lot of things that you put out there, both you and Nick, both that people can tap into and benefit greatly from as long as they execute, right? And I definitely have executed on a couple of your strategies, couple debit card related opt-in, opt-out strategies awesome. That were just like, oh my gosh. So very helpful that way. But for folks that want to get your help, where can they find you? How can they connect with you?
So we've got a ton of free resources at profitflywheel.com. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the entry point into all the things we have going on, different spreadsheets, quick tools, some of the things you're alluding to. So we give away a lot of trainings and ways to kind of find cash now or reduce risk or both. So mm-hmm. Profit Flywheel or the Certainty app, which is the tool that I'm spending the majority of my time on right now, because I think it can be transformative for folks. Mm-hmm. So we've recently opened the doors for that.
Apple and Android for that app?
Right now it's web-based, but we'll have both apps.
Perfect. Well. So is it certaintyapp.com then, or?
I was surprised I got that URL. Yep. Certainty app.
Nice. Nice work. Yeah. Perfect. Dan, thank you so much for being on the show. I'm truly grateful for you and the wisdom that you imparted.
Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Well, that was a power-packed interview with Dan Nicholson. I really hope you got something out of that financially. I hope he was able to speak into your financial world. I highly encourage folks to reach out to him. He is excellent at what he does. I know several people in my network that use him for all sorts of things in the financial world to help them get where they need to be with their business finances and personal finances. And at the time of this episode hitting the internet, he will have finished a book, released a book called Rigging the Game. I'm actually seeing the social media blitz around that book hitting right now. So I would encourage you to at least get the book. I mean, you're going to hear everything that you heard in this episode with him and more through the book. And it's just going to give you another layer of experience with Dan Nicholson. As always, you can find the links to connect with Dan Nicholson in my show notes. In order to get to my show notes, you got to go to my website, which is www.nicksotelo.com/TUL podcast. A few more things before I let you go. First of all, if you are enjoying this podcast, please go over to Apple Podcasts and leave it a 5-star review and also leave it a written review. That is the primary way to let the world know that this is something that you ought to be listening to, and I would greatly appreciate your support in that way. When you do find yourself over at my website, you're going to see some opportunity buttons, and let me talk about those briefly. One of those opportunities is to receive some information from me about how you can add extra income into your financial situation. And hopefully after listening to Dan Nicholson speak, maybe that's where you're at, that maybe you could use some extra income. Click that button, extra income, and I will send you the info. It'll give you about a 20-minute presentation. That's all it takes. If you're anything like me and you're out in the world moving about doing your business, you can't go to a store, a grocery store, anywhere where they sell magazines or books and not see something related to CBD. I want to be able to help you figure out if CBD is something that you need to add to your life. And again, click that CBD button and I'll shoot you some information and we'll figure out if CBD is something that's going to help you in your life experience. I know for me, one thing that it's done tremendously is helped me not use so many of those painkillers like Tylenol and Advil, because we know they're terrible for your body, but CBD can help tremendously for those that find themselves using things like Tylenol and Advil on a regular basis. And then finally, I'm a coach, I'm a life coach, and if you're in a spot to where you need to get your life on track, you need to level up from where you are to where you want to be, I offer folks a free 30-minute strategy session. Just click on the button, strategy session, and it'll send you to my scheduling link, and you can have 30 minutes of my time. At the end of that time, I guarantee you, you will have more clarity about what you need to do in order to reach whatever it is that next step is in your life. I just want to thank you and congratulate you for spending an hour of your time, more or less, investing in yourself. I think Warren Buffett is on the record saying the only investment that's guaranteed to pay off is the investment that you make in yourself. And you just gave yourself an hour. So I just want to say thank you. This is Dr. Nick Sotelo leaving you one more time, but no fear, I'll be back with another show soon. But in the meantime, I'm going to urge you to do something, take some action that will help you realize and reach your potential. We'll see you on the next show.